Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. As we said earlier, this is an important time of year for the legal profession. Both the U.S. and Michigan Supreme Courts begin hearing oral arguments this week. The American judicial system traces its roots back to English common law, and now an iconic symbol of our legal heritage has come to Ann Arbor for public display. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me to plead his case for why this is so interesting. Good morning, Counselor.
Thank you, Your Honor. 800 years ago, a single document changed the world. In 1215, King John of England signed the Magna Carta. It was a declaration by the English noblemen of their rights, and it set limits to the king's authority. It also established the practice of due process, which, of course, is so key to our democracy. The Magna Carta later became the template for the U.S. Constitution. The University of Michigan Law School is displaying images of the Magna Carta through October 23rd. And Mark, as I was seeking an expert for this story, I got the best of both worlds. Dr. Paul Brand is a law professor with the University of Michigan, and he's also an Englishman who once taught at Oxford, not far from his home.
I am out in the Warwickshire countryside, the county of William Shakespeare. Is what your listeners will know.
First, let's set the scene. It's the year 1215. King John has been on the throne for 16 years. The Crusades have been underway in the Holy Land off and on for more than a century. If you're living in England in 1215, what is your quality of life?
Your quality of life depends a bit on where you are in the social ladder. It's a bit like today in that respect. If you're at the top of the social pecking order, your quality of life is probably not bad, though if you had a slightly more sympathetic king, you would probably be enjoying life rather more. If you're a free man living in the countryside, your quality of life is probably not bad. If you're an unfree man, a villein living in the countryside, well, things could be worse, but at least you're making a living.
Prior to 1215, did you have any specific legal rights that were spelled out on paper?
No legal rights spelled out on paper at all.
Was there such a thing as a judiciary, or was the king the ultimate arbiter and there was no judicial branch as we know it today?
There was a judicial branch. There were courts. There were royal courts with justices appointed by the king, but who were meant to, and to a very large extent did do, justice in accordance with what was developing as a common law of England.
So in 1215, there was great discontent between King John and the noblemen. Was there one trigger that pushed the barons to putting their grievances in writing into what became the Magna Carta, and what convinced King John to voluntarily allow these limits to his own power?
If there was one trigger to John conceding that, it was the fact that he had been in some respects, an extremely unsuccessful king. He and his brother and his father had held quite extensive lands in northern France, as well as in England, as well as Ireland. They had lost most of their French lands. John had lost most of the French lands in the early years, in the first decade of the 13th century. John's continental allies had just lost a major battle in the Battle of Bouvines against the French king in 1214. And John was, to some extent, simply politically at the mercy of the barons who had taken up arms against him earlier in 1215. He was in a position where militarily he was at a disadvantage compared with the baronial forces. And the baronial forces also had on their side the chief men of the City of London, which already then was an important financial center.
So as the story goes, in June of 1215, John and many of the barons assembled at Runnymede on the Thames River and signed this compact. But initially, the Magna Carta was a failure. And I think a big part of that is because in the 13th century, church and state were still very much intertwined, and the Pope was against the Magna Carta.
What you have to know about that is that the Pope already was on John's side. John had surrendered his kingdom to the Pope 2 years previously, and the Pope was therefore inclined to take John's side. The Pope could also say that John had been forced to make the concessions that he made in Magna Carta, essentially at the point of the sword. So he could say that promises made under duress should not be binding on the person that made them, in this case, King John.
And then Pope Innocent III's nullification of the Magna Carta set in motion an internal civil war in England.
Mm-hmm. But I think even if he hadn't done so, King John would have walked away from the promises he made in Magna Carta. I think the civil war would probably have taken place anyway. John was not a man to keep his word if he could possibly manage not to do so.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Brand, a William W. Cook Global Law Professor at the University of Michigan. He is also an emeritus fellow at All Souls College at the University of Oxford. And as we spoke about originally in 1215, this was a document presented by the noblemen, by the barons. But there are some passages that suggest that it does extend to the rights of commoners, and in particular, the concept of due process. In fact, there is a passage in the Magna Carta that does talk about due process.
No freeman shall be taken, imprisoned, deceased, outlawed, banished, or in any way destroyed, nor will we proceed against or prosecute him, except by the lawful judgment of his peers or by the law of the land.
There is a clause in the original Magna Carta of 1215 that says all these grants, all these concessions that we, the king, have made in respect of our men, they are to observe in respect of their own men. So it's built in to the very structure of Magna Carta. It doesn't depend at all on that then creeping up on people unawares as a way in which it gets interpreted. It's built into the actual structure of the document from the very beginning.
Fast forwarding to the end of the 18th century, to the American Revolution, by the time the colonists are preparing to create their constitution, how did they view the Magna Carta as their predecessor, as their justification for creating broader rights and protections for their own people?
I think they see it as being a fundamental part of the rights and liberties of all free Englishmen. And they took the view that the due process clause, but also the clause that in the 1215 Magna Carta, but not in later ones, about the need for consent to taxation, is also something to which they are entitled as a birthright as English subjects.
Going back to the 13th century for a moment, I can't help but think of all the stories that we have grown up with about Robin Hood, who certainly was a fictitious character, but the time period in which it is set is very real, and it does deal with King John.
A king does not bargain for the loyalty that every subject owes him. Without loyalty, there is no kingdom. There is nothing.
I'm here to speak for Sir Walter Locksley.
Speak, if you must.
If you're trying to build for the future, you must set your foundations strong. The laws of this land enslave people to its king. A king who demands loyalty but offers nothing in return. You build a country like you build a cathedral, from the ground up. Empower every man, and you will gain strength.
I wonder if you have any observations, Dr. Brand, on this notion of a vigilante, an outlaw, sticking up for the rights of the downtrodden.
I think that the legend tends actually to associate Robin Hood, if anything, not with John, but with his brother, his elder brother, Richard. The notion of an outlaw managing to support the poor, to protect them against the rich, that has enormous appeal. But in practice, the outlaws who lived in the medieval English countryside tended, as outlaws often do, to prey as much on their weaker brethren as the stronger people passing through their territory, who generally had rather more protection of their own than the poor neighbors of the outlaws did.
So that tells me then that Hollywood and Walt Disney have taken incredible poetic license with the story over the years.
Well, what a surprise.
Dr. Paul Brand is a William W. Cook Global Law Professor at the University of Michigan, and he is also an Emeritus Fellow at All Souls College at the University of Oxford in England. Dr. Brand, it has been a pleasure speaking with you about this fascinating period in medieval and world history.
That's been my pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.